Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast, episode 417. You don't know this, but we're actually recording this for the second time because I'm kind of dumb, and I'm Russell Holly. We are at day 5 of GDC, and no one in this room has slept in a long time, which is why we're giggly and silly. So we're going to do a recap of the stuff that we saw at GDC that's kind of fun. But first, I'm going to let the other two amazing people on this episode introduce themselves.
Hi, I am Carly Velucci.
And hi, I'm Jennifer Shirley.
And just really quickly, Jennifer, where do you what is your background? What do you do that is so super exciting? Because I know, but I would really rather you say it.
I'm a game designer. I've been a game designer for the last 7.5 years. Currently a lead game designer at Arena.net. You know me because I do cool space stuff sometimes.
Right, my favorite space stuff.
I worked for a while on the Earthside franchise while I was in Australia, which made space games in collaboration with NASA to develop future astronaut training. It's pretty cool.
It was very cool. And you guys listening to the podcast don't know this, but Carly actually works behind the scenes at Mobile Nations doing a lot of our editorial stuff. And if she didn't exist, I would probably peel my skin off.
Hopefully not. But yeah, mostly I'm in the background editing all the stuff. I don't do a lot of writing, unfortunately, but you'll see me a bunch on the site, you know, with the GDC, you know, recaps. So
we're gonna do this kind of short and sweet, and cover as many of the different topics that we saw at GDC as possible, and then we're gonna do at the end kind of a recap of just the general things that we saw at the convention that were our favorite. But because this is an Android-based podcast, we should probably start with Google. They did a thing this year. It was kind of interesting. GDC doesn't usually get a ton of keynote presentations anymore, but we got one this year for Stadia, which is a game streaming service that is the end result of the Project Stream demo that was shown earlier this year. And it made a lot of lofty promises. The you know, people got up on stage and promised a streaming service for things as, you know, your phone, your tablet, your computer, your Chromebook. The Chromecast that connects to your television, specifically the Chromecast Ultra, but capable of 4K game streaming at 60 frames per second with what they're promising is pretty low latency. And that alone is a pretty, you know, auspicious goal.
And that, like, not even that, but you can jump from device to device and jump right into a game within, what they said, 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Was the number they gave. So basically you turn on your device, you hop into a game, and then you play the game no problem is what they're promising, essentially.
Yeah. The presentation had a huge focus on social, being able to share links to games, to be able to stream games from within Stadia and have other people join a lobby to play with you if you are streaming games. They even have MatPat on stage, who, if you don't know, you're welcome. Don't go look him up. But there's a lot of stuff. You know, from a social perspective, that is really about growing kind of YouTube gaming audiences.
Yes, and it's a way for Google to kind of like create a more tightly wound ecosystem of all their existing services. So you can have, you know, the Google, the streaming thing, but then you can also have YouTube, and then you have the cloud, and it's all kind of working together to support itself, essentially.
So of the lofty goals that got made, the lofty, you know, promises that were made, rather, the first was, you know, being able to play anywhere and being able to play with a fairly low internet connection. We know that now means 30 megabytes for 4K at 60 frames per second, which is not a lot for some people, but the US average is something around 15. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, urban areas, you know, that aren't going to have, you know, access to a ton of things. But the other, you know, promise was game developers would be able to easily bring your game to this platform. They said that Unity and Unreal were supported and it should be fairly simple to bring games over. And the first time that I said this, Jennifer got a pretty loud laugh out of that.
Yeah, we'll have to see if that's actually true. You know, porting games is not simple. To not put a platform right now, you know, it's always costs money and it needs to have a decent reason and decent return of investment for us to consider that. We're, you know, supporting a platform that we really believe in for the future of our own industry. So I'm curious what this is going to be like, but just promising it is not enough.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the developer investment, we don't know anything at all about the price for this. Like, we have no idea what this is going to cost consumers, much less what developers are going to make from it. You know, is this going to be a simple subscription service, or are you going to pay per game? Like, how would you think this would work, Carly?
I mean, my guess, just based on the presentations, that they're really going to heavily use the Google Play Store, probably in the same way that they already sell mobile games and
apps. So, like, buying individual titles?
Yeah, and they'll probably be cheaper than, like, you know, buying, you know, a hard disk copy, but it's still probably going to be generally priced about the same. It's just a matter of how much it's going to cost for developers to use and how much that controller is going to cost, because the controller is a complete mystery to me. It could cost $60 like other controllers do. It could cost more, it could cost less. I have no idea.
Different. Like, I love the whole vision of having all controllers function with it. That's great. And there's a lot there that that is good for our audiences. But it can be a bit of a nightmare for us.
Yeah, there's a ton of different input methods.
Considerations, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Google says they're already working with a ton of partners already. And I assume that means they're getting feedback from those developers and those studios. Like, id Software was on stage talking about Doom Eternal. And then obviously we saw Assassin's Creed earlier with Project Steam. And I heard from a guy at one of the booths that they're working with a fighting games company, which you can, you know, interpret that as you will, because there's many of those.
Yeah. The list of AAA fighting game companies is, well, it's real long these days. It's going to be a King
of
Fighters game.
It's all of... So, yes.
It's a bold thing to say. It's a bold thing to say to promise fighting games, because that's, like, top tier.
That was the number one thing that I got
stuff
in comments, yeah, was how would fighting games work on this? Because input latency for fighting games, people, like, you know, competition level fighting game people take that very, very seriously, you know?
Yeah, and the thing about the fighting games, like, people who play fighting games, it's almost never people who just, like, I'm going to pick up, you know, this game today. It's like the main people you want to, your target demographic is almost always going to be people who care about things like latency and people who have fight sticks and things like that.
Yeah. I have friends who really love, like, the competition circuit for fighting games. And I play with them, in very much the same way that a professional boxer plays with a boxing bag.
Yeah, no, I could not.
In that, you know, it is a warm-up for when they have an actual fight, because I'm not very good at them. But,
yeah, like, I played Mortal Kombat, and that's about it.
Right, yeah. It's really kind of fascinating to see that these kind of, you know, promises are made, but and then not a ton of details, you know. So that was kind of an interesting thing. That the demo stations didn't have a lot. We didn't get a chance to play with the actual controller. And the general expectation here is that we'll get a little more information around Google I.O.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get a little more information probably at E3. Mm-hmm. And then a proper launch in the summer.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the choice of announcing it at GDC was quite interesting to me, because it could be a hint at that they really want to work with us on making this successful.
Yeah, that was my interpretation of the decision to
getting
us
on board before getting audiences on board. And that's, you know, that's a commitment that I appreciate.
Yeah, and I hope that means that they'll be getting feedback from developers on how this is all going to work. And who knows, maybe it will work, maybe it won't. Again, we have no idea. And, you know, the only hands-on we really got was, you know, there were a couple stations on the GDC floor, and they had, like, the developer sandbox where they could play around with different latency, different internet connections in the sandbox itself. But, you know, that doesn't really say much, because there's still no real world application of it.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be a wait and see thing. The other feature that I'm still trying to wrap my head around is, of all things, Google Assistant.
Yes.
One of the buttons on the gamepad, on the gamepad made for Stadia, launches Google Assistant so that you can speak into the microphone on the controller and make requests and have Google answer them. And the demo they gave was someone being stuck in a level and asking Google Assistant for help with the part of the game they were on, and Google Assistant being, like, spatially aware of the position in the game and being able to deliver an answer that helped the person solve the puzzle. And, like, none of that make sense to me. Like, it had to be something, in order for that to work, the developer would have to be so deeply involved to you know, give Google Assistant the cues necessary to give the right answer.
And there would have to be playthroughs already on YouTube for it to refer to, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a coder, but I assume if the developer had to put that in, that would have to be there.
There has to be some kind of awareness there, yeah. That, like, and so it really kind of blew my mind that they were bragging about this thing as a feature, because it tells me that, you know, Google is going to heavily encourage some developer, and possibibly in-house, because Stadia is also a publishing company for games now.
Yeah, they have their own first-party publishing company now, run by Jade Raymond from Visceral.
So we're going to see a game, I'm sure, at launch where Google Assistant is a part of the game mechanic, and I am not excited about that.
I'm so worried because YouTube, the algorithm is such garbage right now.
Yeah.
Like, you can look up a game thing, and it'll be a ton of conspiracy videos and alt-right wing stuff, things that have nothing to do with, like, this is how I want to play the game. It's usually something completely unrelated and just terrible. And I want Google to understand that this is an issue that needs to be addressed if that's what they're using the Google Assistant for.
Exactly.
And my other issue also is just in terms of the, you know, jumping into a lobby with a streamer. And I worry about the potential harassment.
There was no discussion at all about anti-harassment tools. And that... Yeah. Isn't great, because especially the way that Google itself has to handle anti-harassment stuff on YouTube, you should lead with that.
Yeah, like, YouTube is under heavy criticism right now, and they've been for probably years at this point because of all the alt-right conspiracy stuff that does get filtered to the top of search results.
Right.
And I know people who stream on Twitch and they have to deal with stalkers who can get around, you know, all the filters and just keep, you know, harassing them. And, I mean, I have to imagine that there's some sort of filter in place for a lobby, but I worry that's just going to give somebody a more direct line to a streamer.
There's some unfortunate potential for harassment there if Google doesn't start with harassment features.
Right.
Like, it has to be available at launch. It's a super important thing, and that it wasn't something that was discussed is a little concerning, but it could have just been that Google's message was more just kind of optimism focused. And I just hope that that's not...
We don't need another platform that doesn't have these considerations from the start.
I fully agree.
Because that's, you know, tacking them on later always has issues. It always means that we're an afterthought. Like, our safety is an afterthought. And,
yeah.
You know, we should at least by now be at a point where this is not the case and where... We design with that in mind.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. And I have to imagine that this announcement was just to announce it and then get all the developers on board with it. And they'll hopefully have more details later. Like, I keep saying that, you know, people are having these conversations like, oh, like, Google is not as good as this thing. I'm like, but Stadia's not out yet.
Right. It's not a thing that exists.
Yeah, it's still a work in progress. We'll, you know, when we have, like, an actual hands-on thing, it'll be more concrete. But I think we just have to wait and see for a lot of it, which is annoying, because this is a huge product. It's by one of the biggest companies, and we don't know anything, and they're not really answering any questions.
Yeah. So especially when it comes to the integration with YouTube and the integration with Google Assistant, we need way more tools than what's currently available.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to use Google Assistant to look up a gameplay video, and I promise this is the last time I will pick on him. I don't want... a game theory video to pop up telling me the secrets of Legend of Zelda while I'm playing Legend of Zelda. Like, that's not what I want when I'm trying to get out of this thing. And I certainly don't want to open up the game to let, you know, me or anyone else, you know, play a game online and stream a game online and have someone jump in whose entire purpose is to be negative and hateful and then introduce that content onto my stream, much less have to deal with it myself.
Exactly. And so I have so many questions. I'm trying to be patient and just wait and see what's going to happen. But I hope Google's going to come up with stuff at least in the next month.
Yeah. So we've actually had some pretty positive harassment based conversations in sessions at Google I/O over the last couple of years for other features, like
okay.
other tool sets. So it wouldn't shock me to see that be a session at I/O where they kind of like deep dive on that specific feature set. And I hope that that's what happens.
Yeah, I hope so too.
So pivoting really quickly, there's already a big talk. Our Windows Central counterparts are very excited about their own version of a game streaming service from Microsoft. Project xCloud is something that was announced as kind of an in-development thing a little while ago where they take an Xbox, They put it in the cloud, and the Microsoft Azure servers make it so that any Xbox game can be played on a phone. It's not quite the same as Stadia, but it is a similar in general concept.
I mean, it's just like an evolution of what Windows already has been, Microsoft has already been doing.
Right. And so as a big part of that, the demonstrations that got given by the Project X Cloud at GDC this year was less focused on kind of features and lofty goals and anything, and more about this, like how you're actually going to be able to play games on phones. And this, I thought, was really interesting because the big way that that presentation started was there's a whole generation of gamers who their first controller is holding their phone up and putting their thumbs on glass, and that's their first controller. That's
right.
Their first input mechanism is having that. And so thinking with those gamers in mind is something that they want Xbox developers to be doing. And that gets tricky because putting the entire Xbox controller on a screen looks bad. I'm
yes.
going to show Jennifer a picture.
Please
of,
do. It is bad.
Of what Microsoft thought that the default look for this controller would be on a phone, where all of the Xbox buttons are kind of generated on the screen. And you don't, like...
You can't see that, but I'm just, like, burying my face in my hands.
You
know,
can't see much of the actual screen where the game is in this environment.
But even if you would, like... It's like a nice thought that we are all very familiar with our phones and with using our phones, and that's nice, but I always think that's kind of... We're trying to translate controllers, like classic controllers that were designed to be ergonomic and to fit into our hands naturally and comfortably for hours, for our phones, and it's just like such a poor use of a phone, honestly. That's what I feel about that.
I completely agree, but like, I mean, they said, and I kind of agree because I have younger cousins, like, they're so much more used to it than we are.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not comfortable to hold a phone.
It's not.
It's not.
It's bad for your hands, it's bad ergonomics, so, you know, I'm not so sure we should do this.
So, you know, after showing that picture, the gentleman on stage very quickly said, this doesn't look good, and we want you guys to do better. We want you to do better for, not just for you, but for your communities. And one of the examples that got given afterwards was a controller layout for Forza 4. And this removed a lot of those buttons, changed kind of the steering wheel function, and you know, made kind of purpose-driven kind of UI functions. And I'm showing this version of the controller to Jennifer, and it's really different. It's still not great. It's still definitely not the same thing as a controller, but they freed up a lot more of the screen, and they kind of made the buttons more purpose-oriented for the game that's actually happening. And that is notably less terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to being able to use it depending on the game. What I'm trying to say is, on a phone, there's no one-size-fits-all, and it shouldn't be. Because the cool part about using the screen space like that and using the phone like that and using a touch input is to make it, to tailor it to your game experience.
Right.
And that is the cool part, and not, like, trying to come up with the one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah.
That is the least interesting part for a developer in this case.
Yeah, although the presentation was kind of about how they are sort of doing that, but they're also sort of not.
Mm.
Like, there was a lot of examples about how, you know, he had, like, the custom controls you can do. Like, they have another example they showed was Cuphead. Like, you don't really need a D-pad to play Cuphead.
Cuphead has four buttons.
Yeah, so
like, the entire game is
so
four
the
buttons.
So the version they showed was had four buttons. But it's also like some games are better on phones than other games.
Absolutely.
And I think it's just a matter of, like, if this thing, you know, I assume it'll come to fruition, but when it does come to fruition, I just feel like people will just use it with the games that work with phones.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a whole lot of bending and twisting. I feel like if a developer goes and puts the effort of putting their game into xCloud, because it's something you have to do with intent. It's not something, Microsoft's not just going to go, the entire catalog is available, and if you haven't optimized your game, here's this generic-looking controller that's bad. It seemed like the understanding was that the developers would have to design with intent, and they could use this generic controller if they didn't want to put in the energy into making their own custom UI for the controller.
Mm-hmm.
But these tools were available to make the game better for you know, their communities.
Yeah, and the presentation was about all the tools they have for developers and how, again, I'm not a coder or programmer, so I don't know how, you know, amazing what they talked about was, but it was kind of like, you know, this is a set of tools we can give to developers and they work across all devices. It's easy to use. You don't have to pay for like extra stuff. It's all just in this one kit.
Right, and it and developing is all intent based. So if someone if you put in these extra controller functions, then when you launch a game, if you're launching inside of xCloud, then that stuff becomes active. But if you're just playing on, you know, your Xbox on your television, then you don't have to, none of that stuff is going to show up for the person who's only got an Xbox and doesn't care about xCloud.
Yeah, and I did like the example they gave with Halo when they were talking about like how you can put it in so that the controller will disappear during like a cutscene.
So the Halo demo was where things got complicated for me, because as exciting as it sounded, this whole like being able to shift between different controller layouts, they took it to a really significant extreme when they were talking about Halo, because they first said, you know, the controls are going to disappear during a cutscene and then jump up at the last second so that you can jump in and just immediately get into the action. But they're talking about a dedicated UI on the screen for when you're in a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
when you're on the back of a vehicle,
yeah.
when you're running around just in Spartan mode, when you're, you know, when you're doing all of these different things. And Halo is just such, it's such a complicated game to begin with.
Yeah.
Having to remember where all of those layouts are for all of those games is, you know, you're still staring at the screen where the buttons are. So it's not like a controller where you're staring up at the television and you kind of have that muscle memory,
mm-hmm.
but you still develop muscle memory for games on your phone.
Yeah. And it always takes a second when something changes.
Right.
Like if you're playing a game and they switch you to a different character with a different skill set, like there's that moment where you're like, oh, I have to actually fix how
yeah.
I'm playing.
In the time there, he described four entirely different UIs,
right.
essentially, for and being able to rapidly switch between them while playing this exact same game. And that just
More
seemed
laughter.
Really complicated.
Yeah, like I'm just thinking of all my poor UI UX designer friends who would just like lose their hair over that, I suppose. You know, I like that we're now thinking more about UI and UX in less traditional ways, and it allows us to innovate. But making four different UIs for the same game and being consistent throughout that is a challenge. You know, it's a challenge because you have to develop a language that makes sense to people and that is easily adaptable depending on context, and that's just a lot to consider. And there's, you know, UI UX designers, like specific trained people are very new in this industry. It has only just become a thing in the last couple of years, and we've recruited a lot of people from web for that,
right?
Who are amazing. Like only just in the last couple of years have AAA companies actually adapted dedicated UX and UI designers for these exact problems. So, you know, that's a challenge.
Yeah, so I mean, it has the potential to be interesting, but the core there is this is a generation of people who are going to be playing possibly even the majority of the time these Xbox games on an Android phone or an iPhone. Like the Xbox, the whole point of this service is for your Xbox games to live online and you not need to sit in front of your television to enjoy the same content. And I still don't know that I'm going to be one of those people, but it's interesting that the goal here was very much, you know, this younger generation has grown up. That line stuck with me, that this was their first controller. He picked up the phone and he said that this is their first controller, and that stuck with me. That was kind of an impactful thing.
It is. I mean, so I mean, just from my point of view, like I would never play a game like Halo on a phone. Like that's just not something
I'm
I'll ever
do.
I'm
not even sure that I would play a game like Halo on something like a Switch.
I might, because the Switch is good.
There's just a lot of, there's weight there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I just played other shooters on the Switch, and I've never
yeah.
really had an issue. I mean, like, I feel like this is more interesting as, like, a person who might want to resume a game on another console,
sure.
or if I'm, like, somewhere else, and I can store my game files on the cloud so it's not taking up space on my computer while I move it around, you know?
Makes sense.
There's different purposes for, like, everybody would probably use it differently. So a lot of this just seems superfluous to me, the point is I would probably use it, just probably not as much as they're expecting users to use it.
This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Wix. The most difficult part of running a website is to get an audience, to get people to find you. And that's why Wix is so great. If you need a website, you should try Wix. 140 million people already do, And that's because you can start for free. Wix has over 500 stunning templates that you can use to give you a boost, or if you know what you're doing, you can start from scratch. And once you're all up and running, there are built-in SEO tools to make it really easy for an audience to find your content online, at Google, Bing, or wherever you search. Wix is great because it makes it easy to build a really nice-looking website fast. There's a website builder that you can drag and drop different parts of the website onto your page and make it look really good, change up colors, change up designs, and make it look yours even though you're already using a template. And then finally, when you're ready to publish, there are all of these things that you can do to make it more enticing for people when they get there. You can post a forum. You can communicate directly with your clients if you're selling something. Or you can just make beautiful galleries and videos so people will spend longer on your Wix website. Whether you're starting a new business or just trying to build an archive of your podcast, Wix is a great place to do it. I've been playing around with Wix for the last few weeks, and I'm going to tell you, it is really easy to make something look really good. If you want to get started with Wix for free, all you need to do is go to Wix.com, that's Wix.com/podcast to get 10% off your premium subscription. That's Wix.com/podcast for 10% off your order. Thanks, Wix, for sponsoring the Android Central podcast, and we now return you to your regular scheduled show.
All right, so the next thing that I want to talk pretty briefly on, because it was something that we got to try and I was pretty excited about, Oculus actually kind of surprised us. I thought that Oculus was going to give us a little more information about the Oculus Quest, which we did get. Was pretty cool, but also an entirely new headset. The Oculus Rift S has been announced and will be the exact same price as the Oculus Quest. It's another $400 headset,
which is crazy.
And it's going to be available for PC as a full replacement to the Oculus Rift CV1. This is its successor, and it just kind of got dropped on everyone at GDC, which was kind of fascinating. The big highlights here: the Oculus Rift S. Drops the Constellation cameras, which are the stocks that do all of the tracking stuff in exchange for inside-out tracking.
Mm-hmm.
The inside-out tracking is done by 5 cameras on the headset, and the headset band itself is actually changed to the Halo style that you see in a lot of Windows Mixed Reality headsets. So that kind of crank on instead of the weird kind of baseball cap thing that Oculus does with all of their other headsets. And the controllers are now the same controllers that are on the Oculus Quest, which is the loop kind of goes up above your hand so that your hand doesn't occlude the bits that are sending tracking data up to the headset.
Right, and it's also a way to like track movement in your fingers.
Yes. A couple other really quick things is the cable itself is actually slightly longer. I think it's actually 10 foot instead of 8 foot. On this headset, and you no longer have to face the screen that you're playing, so you can actually turn, and it gives you a little more freedom of movement. We played a couple of games through this. I accidentally punched a guy doing the demo station because I leaned a little too far when I was swinging a sword. I was a Viking lady and got really excited.
You were very excited.
I am a delightful Viking lady. It was Asgard's Wrath.
At one point, he caught a dagger and then threw it back at someone.
Oh, my God.
The developer was like, I didn't know you could do that. Or the guy doing the demo station was very excited. I didn't know that was a thing.
Favorite developer moments.
That's right. Yeah, it was
I didn't know I could do this in my own game.
I mean, the guy seemed fine. It looked worse than it probably was, but I was very amused.
I felt awful because I definitely leaned to swing that sword, and I felt a person. It was bad. But the headset itself is a lot of fun. I'm really impressed that Oculus is kind of focused on keeping the headset price. Something that will make VR people pause a little bit, if you kind of follow this space pretty closely, the display has switched from AMOLED to LCD, and the display is 80 hertz instead of 90, which means that all of the things happening through the headset is at 80 frames per second instead of 90 frames per second. And 90 frames per second has kind of been a standard in PC class VR headsets for a while because concerns of motion sickness and kind of stability. And so, you know, kind of guaranteeing that 90 frames per second frame rate has been a thing. It's kind of been a hallmark of VR development for PCs for as long as the Rift and the Vive and these kind of VR class headsets have been around. And it was kind of amazing to hear Oculus kind of brush this off there. Like, we dropped it down to 80 frames per second, and nobody really is going to notice.
I mean, I wouldn't notice something like that, but I know other people would, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, you this is kind of interesting because you used both the Rift and the Quest for the first time here, and the Rift 2, the Rift S, I'm going to...
The Rift 2 is also probably fine.
For a really long time, that's going to get me in trouble. The Rift S is 80 frames per second, and the Quest is 72 frames per second. And
okay.
I'm guessing you probably didn't notice a difference between
them. Nope. I mean, it's hard to say also because I didn't play the same games on both.
Sure.
But, yeah, that's not something I notice. I'm not a very visual,
yeah,
specific person, so that's never been a problem for me.
So the Rift S is going to come out later this spring. My guess is it's actually going to launch on the anniversary of the day that the CV1 was available.
That makes sense.
Which is, I think, like April 23rd or something. I have to go and look. I don't have my notes in front of me. And then the Quest will probably end up being revealed as with it... at Facebook's F8 conference, because that's what they did with the Oculus Go last year.
When's that?
I don't know.
Who knows when anything
don't
is.
Don't get me started on my thoughts on Facebook. That's an entirely separate podcast.
Fair enough.
But you got to use Quest for the first time, so I figured,
yes,
I would let you share those thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece for Android Central that kind of expressed my history with VR, which isn't very extensive. I've had mostly just awkward experiences with VR headsets, kind of like tripping over wires, being really cautious when I'm moving so as to not run into people, even though there are walls there, but still running into walls anyway. And it's always been a very awkward experience for me, and VR headsets have always been kind of out of my league financially, so I've just never really cared so much. And it's also just been a weird industry to follow. I never really thought it was commercially viable, except for like a really niche audience. But the Quest is, it's interesting because it kind of takes all of the issues I personally have had with VR headsets and kind of takes them all away. It's like, yeah, you don't have to worry about wires. You know, you can see your hands and the controllers make sense and it's got full tracking and, you know, it's easy to fit on your head. Like, it's just all these like small things just make it seem more appealing to me as a person who just never really cared about VR. I mean, plus the fact that it's got a really great library already. Like, I would just buy a Quest just to play Beat Saber,
yeah,
all the time.
All of us.
Yeah,
every single person.
Every single person ever.
Exactly.
It's like, yep, I can do this without cables, and I'm down.
Yep.
Yeah, and you can, like, you know, duck and do all... Like, you basically do have free range of movement for the most part. And the things that you can't do, I don't think I would do anyway. So it doesn't really matter. And it's, I mean, the price is also just like really compelling because, you know, I forget how much the original Oculus Rift was, but it was really expensive and kind of out of my completely, I'm like, nope, that's not even a purchase I should consider.
It was $500 before you added the price of the controllers.
Yes.
And the controllers weren't actually available at launch. You had an Xbox controller as your only primary input source for the Oculus Rift. And so it was messy. It took a while for Oculus to kind of catch up to HTC and the stuff that it was doing with Vive. And
mm-hmm.
now it's surpassed it. Like the Oculus Rift is now more popular. It's more used than the HTC Vive in the Steam VR store.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting when you can't actually, like, you have to do some work to get to the Steam store on your Oculus Rift. Like, it's not just a button that you push like it is on Vive. So it's kind of interesting to see how quickly it's kind of taken over in that space.
Yeah, and I don't buy consoles, so I keep saying that's kind of like my next console purchase is just going to be an Oculus Quest because it's $400, which is about as much as like a PS4, like a new PS4 would cost.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know some people still can't afford that, which is totally fine, but I'm like, this is within my range now. Like, VR is finally feels commercially viable to me as a person who's not super nichely interested in it.
The one thing about Quest that stuck me as kind of interesting, is I didn't actually know this until the demonstration that we got, when you build the Guardian barrier system,
mm-hmm.
The headset remembers that barrier system if you take the headset out of the room.
Right. It like knows like you're in the bedroom. So this is was the barrier you set for the bedroom right. or the living room. So you don't even need like a dedicated VR area.
Right. If you've just got a space for it, then it, it sets it up and remembers it. Now you are, Jennifer, you are no longer doing kind of active VR development, but you still do. Yes, I am very sad too.
I'm very sad.
Do you still have, like a VR headset at home that you regularly use?
It is currently still in a shipping container.
Well, sure.
shipping stuff from Australia takes very long, but yeah, I will also hands down buy a Quest.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
Just to play Beat Saber.
Just to play Beat Saber. If only that. That's like plenty for me to convince me to use it.
And I've played Beat Saber on all of the platforms so far, mm-hmm. and it was exactly the same on Quest. Like it was
okay.
fantastic. It looked and felt exactly the same. The cool thing about the Quest is, you know, something Oculus has been doing with all of their headsets is it's got little speakers tucked up into the thing, so you don't have to have headphones on to still enjoy kind of the music that comes down with Beat Saber, which is a very important part of that. So you really can, like, it's like a party thing. Like, you can take a mm-hmm. Quest somewhere and just hand it around and have a bunch of people play Beat Saber, and that is super cool.
Yeah, and just...
Can we just have multiplayer Beat Saber, though?
That, I want that. That would be great. Like competitive Beat Saber?
Hell yeah.
That I mean, DDR has it.
It's true.
It's already there. Just build an image.
Yeah, I can see that being a very cool thing. So, yeah, that's, you know, and while this isn't going to matter, I think, for most things, the Oculus Quest is an entirely Android-based platform. It's a Snapdragon 835 processor that's running mm-hmm. it. Snapdragon 835 is kind of a known quantity when it comes to phones. It's mm-hmm. it's not the fastest processor out there, but it's pretty good. But because it's in an Oculus Quest, there's an active cooling unit in it, which means that they can overclock it quite a bit and get some extra performance out of it. And a lot of the games, you know, Oculus is working very hard to make sure that the games on here feel very similar to the games that you would get on a PC class mm-hmm. VR system. And every single demo that I've seen so far, they've succeeded. And
right.
I'm very excited about that. But it also means that the store is going to be very heavily curated for at least the first year.
I mean, that's fine, though, because, like, with VR, you want that.
Yeah, every experience on Oculus Quest is not going to be an experiment. It's not going to be a tech demo. It's going to be a, like, this is a guaranteed good experience.
Yeah, like, when I get a bad like game in VR, it's not just like, oh wow, that was a bad game, like it physically affects me because
yeah.
I'm that person that gets motion sickness, and I know that like VR headsets have gotten so much better with that, but it's still something I worry about, and it's something that's very possible with a game that's just not good
or
optimized
well. Some developers kind of leaned into it in the early days of VR when the Gear VR came
idea.
out. Yeah, it was not great when the Gear VR first launched. Cartoon Network had an app that like intentionally messed with you. Like it was
why?
because it was the Adult Swim guys, and they were like,
oh,
let's mess with people.
That makes way more sense
yeah.
though. That's
so
it, exactly something they would do.
Right. You basically put the headset on and it was as though you were in an acid trip and not like in a great way.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
So it was messy on purpose. And so that kind of thing is not gonna happen in this store, and that's gonna be a good thing.
Yes, I agree.
We just all need to play more Beat Saber.
Beat Saber party.
This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by KiwiCo. This is a new sponsor to the show, and I'm really excited about it. I'm a new father. I have a 7-month-old girl, and she's starting to get interested in dynamic toys, in dynamic play, in things that really engage her. And that's why I was so excited to get a KiwiCo crate in the mail. KiwiCo provides projects based on the ideals of STEAM, which is obviously science, technology, engineering, art, and math. You've heard about STEM, but KiwiCo makes sure that you get some play through art as well. Each month, you get a crate that includes a new project that's age appropriate to your child. In my first crate, my daughter got a drum set and a couple of rattles. And even though it's created a heck of a racket in my house, she loves it. She will not stop banging on this drum. And I think we may have a new Meg White in the family. And you know what? I'm super happy because this is something that I may not have known if we didn't get a Kiwi crate in the mail a few days ago. If you're interested in learning more about it, you can actually get your first crate free by going to kiwico.com/ACP. That's like the best offer in the world. No obligations after that. You can cancel at any time, but I highly recommend it because it makes learning fun. It makes it engaging for ages 0 all the way to 16. KiwiCo provides crates through 7 age lineups, so you get a variety of different projects regardless of your child's age, and you get this amazing gift, this amazing present in the mail every month. So to get that, as I said, go to KiwiCo, that's KiwiCo.com/ACP to sign up for KiwiCo and get your first crate free. KiwiCo.com/ACP. And thank you, KiwiCo, for sponsoring the Android Central podcast. Now, back to the show.
Okay, so my very last thing, very quickly, just kind of a roundtable of all the stuff that we saw at GDC that was interesting. I'm going to let Jennifer go first because she actually has to go.
Where to start? I don't know. My favorite thing about GDC every year, apart from my personal things that I like to do, is always the old control section mm-hmm. on yeah. the show floor. I was part of Alt Control myself with when we were showing the physical control set of objects in space mm-hmm. 2 years ago, which was incredible and amazing. But since then, Alt Control has just been my favorite part of the entire conference because it's so innovative, so weird. There's just nothing like it. You cannot go anywhere on any show floor where you can see games as weird and strange as that.
Do you have like one that stood out to you?
I think my favorite one, and I have to apologize, I don't know the name. I was looking on my phone for a photo of it, but I couldn't find it. It was a game where you would competitively race trains. and the input was, you're shoveling coal, like with an actual shovel. And the coal was just like black painted golf balls.
Sure.
So there's two people just like shoveling their lives up with themselves onto like this contraption, which is like just a table that's slightly slanted and it just like goes back into where the golf balls are, and they're just like completely shoveling coal. And that's not all. Like, you also have to switch tracks with
oh my
like
God.
A giant lever behind you, and on the side there's like a horn that you need to pull like a whole
that's
so it's
amazing.
Basically steam engine train simulator.
But competitive.
Which is exactly what we needed with train simulator.
Yeah. It was completely amazing and I loved how physically involved it was. And whenever I go and play games on the Alt Control show floor section, I just come home and I have bruises everywhere.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, these look a little dangerous.
They are super dangerous.
One of the Alt Control things was actually tying people up.
Yes,
like,
I was thinking
rope.
About
yes.
that.
Yes. Oh my God, I have all the bruises everywhere from that one. It was hilarious.
I was watching people play. I'm like, this legitimately looks dangerous. I'm wondering how many people just fell because you're just like, so for people listening, it's like sort of a... I keep using the word simulator, but it's like you have two people tied back to back and they have to basically hop the chair to different buttons that are placed around the play area. So you're basically like working with somebody to try and like get out of this trap. But
it's
you're
a hardcore twister.
Yes,
yeah,
really hardcore
right.
twister.
Advanced twister.
But you're tied back to back and like sometimes like they're hopping the chair. I'm like, that chair is going to break.
Yeah.
That chair is going to fall over and they're tied together so they can't do anything. So I was legitimately like, I can't watch this. This is making me very upset.
There's some genuinely funny videos from that. I sat and watched that for entirely too long. The other Alt Control thing that I thought was really cool was the Tetris one.
Yes. I played that today.
They broke out every single button on an NES gamepad into its own controller. So you had one controller that was just the left on the D-pad, one that was just A, one that was just B, and you had four people that sat together and played Tetris.
Yep, I was
on a
left.
Single screen.
I was left. Heard of Tetris. Who would have guessed?
It was amazing.
It was like, go left, go left, switch, left, right. Like, I'm like, I'm just sitting there like, just tell me what to do. This
yeah.
is too stressful for me.
Isn't it amazing how, you know, Tetris is such an old game and we still find ways to innovate Tetris?
Yeah, we have
absolutely.
Tetris
like,
Effect.
What, 25
this,
years?
Yes.
It's incredible. Longer.
Yeah.
So incredible. Like, I love that.
it definitely doesn't get old. Again, very quickly, my favorite thing was actually not on the GDC show floor. It was hiding up by one of the food kiosks.
Okay.
It was a radio.
Yes,
was
I saw that.
It was sitting in between two lights, and it was called Klaxo, the totally not haunted radio.
Yes.
And it was this this like spoken word mystery where you were kind of getting the audio tale of this puzzle, and you had to solve it by turning the knobs on this radio, and you would get, you know, as it changed channels, you would get more of the story. And if you deviated from that story, you got this separate story of this thing that was haunting this radio.
Yes.
That you were then trying to exorcise. And it was amazing.
Yeah, I checked that out for a little bit. It was literally like behind one of the concession stands.
Right.
So I thought it was just like people chilling out. But it's like there was a woman there from USC, and she had helped develop this, and she said it was going to be available to play, like, on...
It's on the web now.
On the web,
yeah. You can actually go to the Klaxo radio. If you search KLAXO radio, you'll find it, and it may actually, if they can solve some of the accessibility concerns that they have right now, it may also be a mobile app at some point.
Yeah.
So this is like a 40 to 50 minute thing, so it's not easy to do kind of in one sitting,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the things that they wanted to solve for.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. It's really funny. So I'm really excited about that. And
yeah.
Again, was just behind one of the...
It just existed. Yeah, it wasn't anywhere near any of the other stuff. It just appeared, and it was super cool and totally not haunted.
I guess, besides, like, the usual stuff, like, I love Day of the Devs. I love, like, the Indie Mega Booth. One of my favorite things was, so, third floor, West Hall, there's nothing there besides, like, maybe some tables and what's called Mild Rumpus. And it's just this area with a bunch of, like, pillows and, like, cushions and a couple just, like, relaxing games. And everyone's just kind of quiet because you're supposed to go there and just kind of chill out and get away from things for a while. And there were definitely times when GDC got really overwhelming for me. So knowing that was there.
Just a chill zone.
Yeah. And
that's cool.
There were some times when it was really crowded, but it was still a space where everyone was just lying down, chilling. So
even, and the games that were there were pretty simple, right?
Yeah, they're like, you know, just basic. I think there was one that was like, you know, art, like an art school, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
So it was just very... Sorry?
I think that was Jared Sandler's game.
Okay. Yeah, someone pointed it out to me. But yeah, like, so having that there is always really nice. I think that GDC this year definitely did have more areas like that.
Where you can just chill out.
Yeah, like there was like the narrative wall where they had typewriters.
They had actual
yes.
Some poor woman walked up to us while Carly and I were sitting there at these typewriters and goes, "Are they wireless?"
Yes. I basically laughed.
I picked up the typewriter and I was like, "It's super wireless."
I basically laughed in her face. I was like, "It's a typewriter."
I felt awful for being ridiculous about it, but yeah, it was very funny.
Aww,
to people
so
who just don't know, you know, had never used a real typewriter before. It was very cool.
But either way, like, that area was like chill, and people were just like sitting down playing with what was there. And then there were like a couple of other areas. There was a music one, and then there was a drawing one.
Yeah,
and they were still on the show floor, so they didn't have quite the same impact as the Mild Rumpus would have, but. Still kind of, like, areas where you can just, like the music area, people were just, like, kind of, like, softly playing their guitars, which
yeah.
was the most San Francisco thing I had ever seen. But it was still, like, oh, there's a mood here.
Mm.
And it is a mood I don't see very often at conventions and at conferences, so.
GDC is by far my favorite convention of the events that I go to every year. And it's because of that weird mix, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you get kind of all of those things. So that's actually going to do it for us for this week. Jennifer, where can people find you on the internet?
Probably the easiest is my Twitter account, which is under @Gaohmwe, GAOHMWE.
And on top of just really super smart things that she does, there will also occasionally, or at least there used to be, hopefully there still is in Seattle, slow motion shots of her firing a bow and arrow, which is just so much fun. And I have not seen one in a while because you just moved to a new area.
It's still in shipping.
Yeah.
So that's happening. Also, strange live tweeting of wrestling shows, and I don't
know
how wrestling functions, so.
So basically, I need to follow you on Twitter.
It is never a dull moment. I love it to death.
Good.
Carly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @VelociRaptor, which is basically Velociraptor with an extra C in it. And I will occasionally probably pop out on different Mobile Nations websites, so you can find me there as well.
Awesome. And you can find me at Russell Holly on pretty much anything, because unlike my other two amazing hosts this week, I don't know how to make intelligent or clever names for social accounts.
It took me a few years to get mine, so.
So I just need a little bit of practice.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'll get it. I'll figure out this internet eventually. So thank you all for listening this week, and next week we'll be back to kind of the normal crew that you're used to. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.